An Osho Talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, number 27.
Are you against all religions? Isn't religion something essentially needed by man?
Yes, I'm against all the religions because I'm for the religion. The very fact that there are so many religions is enough to prove that something is basically wrong, that we have not been able to discover the truth about religion. Because the truth can only be one. Lies can be hundreds. Fictions you can create as many as you like. It is your imagination. But the truth is not your imagination. The truth is a revelation. It is already there. You have not to invent it. You have to discover it. I am against all the religions because all these religions are not religions. If they were religions, there would have been only one religion in the whole world. There is no possibility of even there being two religions. What to say about 300 religions? It is absolutely absurd. It is strange that man continues to tolerate. These are all fictions created by different people, different societies, different geographies. They have nothing to do with religion as such. Because religion is not geographical, is not historical. Religion is not racial, is not national. All these categories are irrelevant as far as religion is concerned. Do you ever think science in terms of nations, races, countries, historical periods, geographies? If the water boils at 100 degrees, here, today, it has been boiling at 100 degrees, always, everywhere, in the past, and it is going to boil at 100 degrees in the future too. It will not make any difference whether the person who is boiling the water is a Jew or a Hindu or a Christian or a communist, whether he believes in God or does not believe in God, whether he is a sinner or a saint, it won't make any difference at all. The water will boil at 100 degrees all the same. That's a truth. And you need not create any fiction about it. Religious experience is a truth. When you discover it, you will not find that it is Christian or Hindu or Mohammedan or Buddhist. It has nothing to do with all these words. The moment you will discover religious truth, all space, all time become irrelevant. It is simply beyond time and space. It is immaterial. 5,000 years before, 5,000 years afterwards, it is exactly the same. The universe remains authentically itself. It is not wearing phony masks that it goes on changing when one mask suits it uses it, when another mask suits it uses that. The universe has no masks. It is utterly naked. It is not like you. It has no personality. Truth has no personality. You have not only personality, you have personalities, each one of you, many personalities. Because you need different faces in different situations with different people. When you are talking to your wife, you need a different personality. The personality of a husband. When you are talking to your girlfriend, you talk differently. you are using the personality of a lover. When you're talking to the priest, you certainly behave in a different way. And when you are talking to your servant, do you behave in the same way as you behave with the rabbi, with the pope, with the mahatma? No. When the servant passes through your room, you don't even take any notice that a person is passing by. The servant is not human. You don't say hello to him. He does not expect any hello from you. He comes and goes, does his work. He is a robot. He is paid for that. You go on reading your newspaper, you don't even give a single glance to the person. You don't ask anything to him. How are you? No, that is not expected. You are the master. But when you go to the office and stand before your boss, then the situation is just the reverse. Now you are the servant. And you are standing there and the boss goes on turning his file as if you are not standing, as if there is nobody. And he may not be looking for anything in those files. He may be just turning those files to show you where you belong. There is no need for him to take any notice of you. If you watch yourself, you will see in 24 hours how many times you go on changing your personality. And it becomes such an automatic process that you need not even make an effort to change it. It becomes automatic. You see your wife coming, it automatically changes. You see your boss coming, it automatically changes. It has been your routine so long that now you have to understand one thing about man, that man's mind has a robot part in it. When you learn something, you have to be alert. For example, if you are learning driving, you have to be alert, watchful of so many things. The road, the people, the other vehicles passing. You have to be aware of your steering. You have to be aware of the brake, you have to be aware of the gears. And in the beginning, when somebody learns, he finds it so much difficult to take care of so many things simultaneously. Once you have learned, what happens? Then you can sing and drive, talk and drive, listen to the radio and drive. Your mind has taken driving to another section, and that section is the robot section of the mind. Now, the robot takes care of everything that you were required to take care in the beginning. The same happens with your personalities. So you are not even aware that you change so quickly. No sound is made, no visible change. But if you watch, you will see everything has changed. I was traveling in a train from Delhi to Amritsar. In my compartment, there was a woman, young, very beautiful. And on each station, the man who was traveling with her and could not get a seat in the coupe, because only in the coupe two persons can have the seats. So he had to travel in another compartment. But on each station he will come running, sometimes bringing sweets, sometimes bringing fruits, sometimes bringing this, sometimes bringing that. I asked the man, "Are you married to this woman?" He said, "Yes, we have been married 7 years." I said, "Don't speak a lie to me. You are not even married for 7 days." He looked shocked. But he said, "How did you find it out?" I said, "This is enough. No husband will come every station, sweets, fruits, and inquiring, 'Do you need anything?' and hugging and kissing. No husband. And married for 7 years. Impossible. You are not married to her at all." He said, "It is true. See somebody else's wife. I am also married and married for 7 years, but that is another woman. And with that woman, what you are saying, actually that's what I do. Even if I can get the seat in the same compartment, I don't. I travel in another compartment, finding any excuse. And once I leave her in her compartment, then only on the station we are going to get down, I come again. Not in the middle." But he said, but how you could find? I said, there is nothing to find in it. It is so simple. Even after 7 days of marriage, this stupid behavior that you are persistently doing on every station drops, simply disappears. Because this behavior is foreplay, not afterplay. He said, what do you mean by foreplay and afterplay? I said, just exactly those words, foreplay. Before you have got hold of the woman, this is foreplay. You are persuading her. And what you are doing with your wife is afterplay. Now you are hoping somehow that compartment gets drowned into the river, falls off the rails, some miracle happens, and you are not to meet that woman again on the coming station where you are going to get down. And you think thousand and one things that miracles after all happen. She can get lost. Somebody may steal her. Or somebody may kill her. Anything is possible in this big world. So many things happen every day. But nothing happens. You find the wife there and you are standing there and you are again talking sweet nothings to her that how much I wished to be with you, how much I missed, how much I remembered you continuously. Yes, you remembered, but for different reasons. Existence has no personality, no question of personalities. It simply is whatsoever it is. And to experience existence as it is to know the truth. And the closest is to move from your own center, because that is from where you are joined with existence. Your hands can touch a flower. Your eyes can see the colors of the clouds, sky, sunset. Your ears can hear the music of the birds and the sound of the running water, or just the breeze passing through the trees, or in the fall the leaves falling silently but still whispering something. But there is a gap between you and the clouds, between you and the falling leaves, between you and the stars. Howsoever close you come, there is still a gap. The very word closeness means two persons, two things, not one. The gap is there, howsoever close. Closest you come in a love affair with a person, perhaps for few moments, I will not say for few hours, few days, perhaps for few moments you come closest to a person, but still there is a gap. You can shout, but your sound will not reach. You can spread your hands, but you cannot touch. The gap, however small, is still big enough to keep you two separate entities. You would like to become one. And that's the misery of all lovers, and the reason why all love affairs fail. They are bound to, because they are trying to do the impossible. It is nobody's fault. They come close. The moment of closeness is so beautiful that they would like to come even more closer, but there comes a limit. There is a limitation. The other is other. And there is no way that you two can become one. Jayapal Sartre says the other is hell. This man is not a psychoanalyst, but it has happened often that painters, poets, novelists, dramatists, artists have come to discover something which the so-called people who are supposed to discover it go on and on and never find it. Now, Freud has never found it that the other is the hell. Neither Jung, nor Adler, nor the whole company that has followed them. Jayapal Sartre, in this small statement, makes something so tremendously deep and profound that it is a revelation. The other is hell. Why? Because when you want to merge, melt, so that the two-ness disappears, and you become one, unified. So that you can see from the eyes of your beloved, and you can smell, and you can taste, and you can hear, not as a separate being, but as one with the person you love. that your both centers jump into each other and become one center. That is where Sat's profound insight comes in. He said, the other is hell. There is no way. The other remains the other, continues to remain the other. Whatsoever you do, everything fails. And it is not the fault of the other. The other is also trying to do everything possible. But you remain the other. Both are trying. But they are going to fail because what they are desiring is impossible. Their alonenesses are their very being. No trespass is possible. You cannot trespass the being of another person. And it is good. Because if people were able to trespass other people's beings, then there was no hope for humanity. Then there was no hope for real freedom to exist ever. Because why? One person should trespass, many can trespass you once it is possible. Then many people can trespass you. Your purity, your sanctity, your individuality will lose all meaning. Sartre is right. He has understood the point that the other is going to remain the other, and the loving heart wants to become one with the beloved. It is going to fail, and that is the misery of lovers. Nobody knows misery more than the lovers. Nobody knows suffering than the lovers. So when he says the other is hell, he is saying many things. He is saying there is no other hell than only one experience when you come so close, where you feel just one step more and the paradise is yours, but that one step you cannot cross. The goal is in front of you. You are standing on the door, but somehow you cannot even knock on the door. It is there, waiting. Not only waiting, welcoming, but somehow you are paralyzed. There is some invisible circle around the other person. Which you cannot cross. And at that moment you will become aware that the same circle is around you. Both the circles, when they come close, touch each other, but only the circumferences of the circle. More than that is not possible. To turn back from the doors of paradise is hell. There is no other hell. The stubborn reality of the other, that it is going to remain other, becomes your failure, becomes the other person's failure too. And you cannot remain stuck at that point. Try to understand. In existence, in life, nothing remains static. Either you go forward or you move away. Forward you cannot move, the invisible wall hits your head and there is no way. And nothing remains static. You start moving away. And the painful memory of failure, the painful memory of reaching so close and yet losing it, the nearest you can come is in love, but love becomes anguish. Ultimately, love becomes anguish. Hence, blessed are those who have never loved. Because they will never know that the other is the hell. To protect you from this experience, all the societies have tried in some way or other that love should not happen. Marriage is good. And of course, living with somebody for years, you start having a certain companionship, a certain need for the other. The other becomes a habit. If the wife goes away for a few days, you are at a loss. You wanted her to go for a few days, at least. And when she goes, then you are at a loss. You cannot find where your shoes are. You cannot find in your own house anything you want. Suddenly, the wife is missed, and you think it is because of love? No. She had become a habit to you. She had taken every care in her hands. Without her, you are at a loss what to do. Even fighting with her had become a routine part of your life. Now, there is nobody to fight in the house. You go from one room to another. Even the fight is missed. You come late home, nobody quarrels. You just go to your bed. And the quarrel every night has become such a routine part of you that you cannot fall asleep without it. It is just like a teddy bear. I sleep with three pillows, two on both of my sides, one under my head. And while I was traveling in India, I had to carry all three pillows. And I use very big pillows, perhaps the biggest size. So when a very big suit was just for three pillows, and whenever I will stay with somebody and they will open my suitcases, and in one suitcase, and big suitcase, biggest suitcase available, only three pillows. He said, what? This big suitcase and you are just carrying only three pillows? I said, I cannot sleep without those two. Those two are absolutely part of my sleep. If somebody takes one of my pillows, then it is difficult for me to sleep. I will miss him the whole night. The wife was wanting to go just for a rest few days. She's wiped out. I think that is exactly the word. Wiped out. With all these children and this husband. A time comes, it is all too much. But when she is gone on a holiday, she starts missing the kids, their noise, their fights. She starts missing the husband, whom to nag. Nagging is such a power trip and such a joy. And the poor fellow cannot do anything. And the wife is so powerful. And she knows that this man outside is a lion. That gives more joy in nagging him and proving him to be just a rat, nothing else. You may be a lion in the outside, but when you come home, then keep your tail down. And remember that here you are not a boss, she starts missing with whom to fight. She starts missing all the care she takes. Now there is nobody to take care of. Small things starts coming to her memory. In the morning, she brings the newspaper to the husband. she had never liked it. The very idea of the husband sitting in front of her, hidden behind the newspaper, she knows why he is reading the newspaper, just to avoid her, so that she is not seen. But now, away from the home, she starts thinking whether somebody has given him her newspaper or not, and how he is going to find his shoes and the clothes. And he is bound to do something stupid in the kitchen. The house may get on fire. Anything is possible. What I have done, why I have come here. And there is nothing to enjoy. All those dreams that she was having home have all flown away. Now she is hankering just to be back as quickly as possible. They have become habits to each other. This is not love. But all the societies have tried this simple formula to avoid you from the experience, which is terrible in a way, but can also become a transformation. It never became a transformation for Jean-Paul Sartre. I feel sorry for the man. He had come very close. When he said the other is the hell. But even coming to that close, to that insight, he is still missing something more significant. His emphasis is still as if the other is responsible for being a hell. No, the other is not responsible. He is not yet seeing the other part, other half part, that you are also the other from the other side. Are you creating the hell for the other person? You are not creating the hell. Then be a little more understanding. The other is also not creating the hell. Don't dump it on the other. It is simply a natural phenomenon that you can come closest in the experience of love, but only closest. You cannot be welded into one being. Your aloneness becomes for the first time crystal clear. No matter what, you are alone. And all the fiction that there may be somebody who is just made for you, there may be somebody who will fill this gap, this emptiness in you. Nobody can do it. Not because nobody wants to do it. No. Everybody would love to do it. But it is just not possible in the very nature of things. And it is good, I repeat, that it is not possible in the nature, very nature of things. Because if it was possible, then there was no necessity of religion, no need of religion. You ask me, is there any essential need of religion for men? Yes, but it comes only after you have experienced that your aloneness is absolute. You cannot deceive yourself by friendship, by love, by money, by power. You cannot go on deceiving yourself for long. One moment is going to come when you will see all your efforts have utterly failed. You are still as alone as you have always been. This is the moment when religion comes in. Religion is nothing but a 180-degree turn from the other to yourself. You have tried the other. It does not work. The other is not responsible. The other has not created the universal law. The other is as much part of this universal law as you are. If your understanding goes a little more deeper, Sartre was just on the brink where he could have turned towards himself. But he stopped there. The other is hell. He condemned the other, but he didn't turn to give a try to oneself. You have given the try to many people in your life, reaching to the farthest person, trying to bring him close to you, succeeded in bringing him very close, and at the last moment, just one step more, and it has failed. The human mind says, perhaps this is not the right person. Find another person. Go on finding another person. The mind goes on giving you hope that if it has not happened with this woman, this man, it may happen with somebody else. Perhaps you were trying with a wrong person. Mind goes on finding consolations, excuses, explanations, rationalizations. But all those are futile. Those rationalizations, explanations, excuses, consolations will keep you away from religion. Sartre could have become one of the religious men. It is very rare. A very ordinary phenomenon, but very rare, because nobody tries the ordinary. Everybody is after the extraordinary. religion is when love has failed. I am for love. I have been teaching my whole life for love, but the reason is strange. But I am an eccentric man. I have been teaching you to go for love because I know unless you come to this crucial point where the other is hell, you will never become religious. I am not for love. My whole effort is for religion. But the pseudo-religions just give you ready-made formulas. And I want to give you the real experience, which I cannot give. I can only show you the path, can explain you how it happens, and then leave you free if you want to experiment with it. If love has not failed, then you are not yet adult enough for religion. You are below age. Whatsoever your age, that does not mean it may be 60, it may be 70, it doesn't mean. If you are still hoping that love can succeed, then you are yet under age. But if you have come to realize this totally, that it is against the nature of things. Existence does not work that way. You are you, the other is other. If you want to taste the experience of existence, it is not via the other, it is direct. Jump within yourself. It is via you, through you. And only love and its failure can throw you inside. Nothing else can throw you inside. Because everything else is far below than love. Money you may have enough, and you may be fed up with it. But that does not mean you will move towards religion. There are so many other things. You may start thinking that money is useless, but money can give you power. It can make you the president of the country. Perhaps there is the thing that you are looking for. You can become the president of the country or a prime minister of a country. And life is short. Much you have wasted in earning the money, and now you will waste it to get into power. And there is a ladder, rung by rung you have to go on the ladder. And there is always a rung higher than you, signaling you, come up. Here is the thing that you want. And when you reach on that rung, there is another rung above you. And once in a while, some stubborn idiot succeeds in reaching to the last rung. From where there is nowhere to go, because there is no higher rung anymore. The ladder has ended. But when you have done so much effort to reach, can you accept to those who are struggling below you that don't bother? Here I have found nothing. I have wasted my whole life, and now I am standing on the ladder's highest rung. All that I can do, I can jump and commit suicide. There is nothing else here. Now that will mean you accept your stupidity. No. A man who has been working so hard to reach to the top, and by the time he reaches, he is almost near his grave. Now it is better to go on smiling, Jimmy Carter smile. I really feel sorry for Jimmy Carter. He is really a poor man. From the topmost rung, he had to come down back on the earth. Now all the smile has disappeared. I have been seeing his photographs since he lost the election, continuously looking at his photographs. Not a single photograph of that big smile, which must have been the biggest in the whole world. What happened to that smile? That smile was phony. Even when he was on the last rung, it was phony. But when you have been in the game of phoniness, in the game of politics, you become so accustomed that even seeing that by the side is just suicide. The American people are very wise. They have assassinated 20% of their presidents. That's great wisdom. They saved those 20% presidents from the situation in which Jimmy Carter is. Yet somebody has shot him while he was smiling. at least he could have the last smile. Death anyway is going to come. Now it will come, but there will be no smile. Anyone becoming a president of a country then tries to remain the president till he dies. Everybody wants to die. As the president, as the prime minister, whatsoever is the highest post. Because he had devoted his whole life to grow this phony personality. Now at least let him have the honors of the death of a president of a country or a prime minister of a country. Yes. He deserves it. He has worked hard for it. And mostly it happens, either he is assassinated, or he dies by heart attack. India had 3 prime ministers since the independence. Jawaharlal Nehru, the first prime minister, died of a shock. Because China attacked India. And he was a great preacher of peace, brotherhood, love. And he had created a third world against Soviet Union and America, that these 2 camps are not the only camps in the world. There is another camp which is neutral. And he had succeeded in creating a third camp, which is neutral. China was part of it. And China was the biggest part of it, the most important part of it. And China attacked India. Now, on the Himalayan borders, it is very difficult to fight Chinese. Indians live not in the Himalayas, but on the plains. This side of Himalaya is Indian, the other side is Chinese. Now, millions of Chinese live on the other side. And they are accustomed of the Himalayan eternal snows. They can fight. You cannot survive with them. In the Himalayas, if fight goes on, nobody can. Just as it used to happen with Germany in First World War, it happened. When Napoleon attacked Russia, it happened. In First World War, Germany attacked Russia, it happened. In Second World War, Hitler committed the same mistake, attacked Russia, it happened. Because Russia is vast, 1/6 land of the whole earth. And 6 to 9 months it is covered with snow. So only for 3 months you can fight. The moment snow starts falling, then nobody can fight with Russians. They are accustomed, their physiology for millions of years is accustomed. It is their home. But for anybody else, it is death. Napoleon got finished there. First World War got finished there. And Adolf Hitler got finished there. In fact, it was a challenge. That's why he attacked Russia. Because Napoleon was defeated there. First World War, Germany was defeated there, and Adolf Hitler wanted to prove that Russia is not something unconquerable. But it was a pure natural thing. When the snow starts falling, then nobody in Russia can be victorious. With Russians, you cannot fight. The same is true about Chinese. China is 1/4 population of the world, the biggest country in the world. And when China attacked India, it took over thousands of miles in the Himalayas, and India could not do anything. It was such a severe shock to Jawaharlal, who was always healthy before it, suddenly started shrinking, dying. As far as I understand, he died a psychological death. To be more accurate, he committed a psychological suicide. He lost all hope for peace, for no war in the world. Because China was the closest friend to India. If you cannot trust a closest friend, whom you are going to trust? He simply lost all joy. Suddenly he became old. Jimmy Carter has suddenly become 10 years old the moment he lost the election. In one day, 10 years simply passed. When people are in power, they can keep their face. It may be painted, but still they can look young, alive, strong. And in fact, they are, because they have succeeded. Although at the last point of success they find it was futile, but what is the point of saying it? The whole world will laugh. It is better to keep silent about it and go on smiling. So you can move from money to power, or from power to money. There are many ways. I have heard of one American rich man who became fed up with all the money he had earned, and his whole life he wasted. Somebody suggested, why don't you go to the East in search of some Mahatma, some sage, who can teach you how to be calm and quiet and blissful? So he rushed to India, went to the Himalayas, asked who is the biggest saint, as if there are smaller saints and bigger saints, but he was a man who knew money and knew that if you have little money, you are a little man. If you have more money, you are a bigger man. If you have even more, you are the biggest. So the same must be in spirituality, how much you have got. He had lived with quantity his whole life. Money is quantity. Spirituality is quality. They are not transferable. But in India also, people think in the same way as everywhere else. They said, yes, there is one biggest sage, the greatest Mahatma, who lives in the Himalayas, in the high peaks, very difficult to reach. Many, in finding him, have died, are lost forever in the snows. But the rich man said, I have nothing to lose. And I have seen all the pleasures of the world. And there is nothing anymore of interest to me. And this challenge is exciting, that nobody has yet found him. I will try. Again, the juice starts flowing. The same way one day he had started running after money. The same ego. Nobody has found him, I will find him. You just describe me the person's face and on what peak he lives and I will go. They described him in detail. And he went. It was really a torturous journey. But he knew how torturous it was when he was earning money. And if he could reach to the top as far as money is concerned, he will manage this journey too. And he managed, tattered, almost dying. But finally he reached and saw the man sitting on the top. He fell, not in gratitude, just tired, Otherwise, Americans don't know. To fall in the feet when you meet the Master, he had simply fallen. He was losing hope. He was almost on the verge of thinking that it is hoping against hope, and at that moment that man, that old sage is there, he falls, and just that he does not die before he can manage to talk, he spreads his hand and takes his feet in his hand and says, "You are a great sage, and I have come from America, thousands of miles." But that was nothing. This Himalayan pilgrimage, walking on feet, but I am happy that I have reached. Now please tell me, what should I do? The Mahatma said, "First, do me a favor. Have you got a cigarette? American brand?" The man was very much shocked. But he has heard that the sages are strange people. Perhaps there is some trick in it. He pulled out a cigarette and the lighter and gave to the sage. And he said, "Now, what do you say to me?" And the sage said, "Please, go back the same way as you have come. But remember, if you come again, don't forget to bring cigarettes." They are so peaceful, so blissful. I really love them. You can go from one stupidity to another stupidity. But if you fail in love, and failing in love means not what you ordinarily mean by it, that the beloved deceives you or the lover deceives you. No, that is not failure. In fact, that is avoiding the failure. If your beloved deceives you before the failure, my failure, she has saved you. She has given you again hope. You will run after another woman. By failure, I mean when you reach to the point where you would like to merge with the other, and suddenly you find a universal law against the merger. Bodies can meet, beings cannot. At that moment, either you become sour and bitter against love. That's how all the religions have become bitter and sour against love. But that is pseudo-religion. No, I don't say that you have to become sour and bitter. In fact, you should be ecstatic that you have found a very foundational love life. That you have come to a point from where turning inwards is possible. There is nowhere to go. You can fall upon yourself. If that happens, then you will say the other is heaven, not hell. Then you will change the statement, because the other made it possible for you to fail in merging, melting, gave you the chance to turn towards yourself. You will be grateful forever. Then the other is heaven. And once you enter into your own being, you have entered the temple. This is what religion is all about. And this entry into oneself is the ultimate growth. You suddenly blossom. It is not a slow gradual growth. No. The word growth gives a wrong impression, as if it's slowly, slowly. No. It is a sudden outburst. One moment, you were nothing. Another moment, a quantum leap, you are all. Because you have tasted your being, and that being is exactly the same as the universal being. But that is the only door available. There is no other door. No church can help you. No synagogue can help you. No temple can help you. There is only one door which can help you, and that is within you. Taking a jump into yourself, you have plunged into existence. In that moment, you feel a tremendous oneness with all. Then you are no more lonely, no more alone. Because there is nobody who is other than you. It is only you expanded in all directions, in all possible manifestations. It is you flowering in the tree. It is you moving in a white cloud. It is you in the ocean, in the river. It is you in the animals, in the people. And it is not something that you have to project or think. That's what pseudo-religions have been doing. They tell you, think that you are one with all. Concentrate. Discipline your mind that you are one with all. Yes, if you try hard, you may start believing it, that you are one with all. But that will be simply a belief. One Sufi was brought to me. He had many followers. And many followers of his have come to me and told me that when our master comes, we would like you both to meet. And he used to come only one time a year at that place. So I said, whenever he comes, you bring him. They said, he is a realized man. He sees himself everywhere. I said, I will not comment on it till I see him. The day came, he arrived. I told his disciples, you bring him directly to me. Let him be my host, my guest. They brought him directly from the station, and he was in an ecstatic fever. That's what you can say it. His eyes, his body was all not in an ordinary state, vibrant. Anybody could see. And he will hug the trees. I had a beautiful garden. Only I used to call it garden. Everybody used to call it the jungle. It was really a jungle, because I don't like English gardens. Well cut, well symmetrical. No, I want something like a jungle, as natural, where no symmetry exists. He came inside the door, and just by the side of the door, there was a beautiful Mulberry tree. He hugged it. It was in blossom. And it is one of the most beautiful perfumes. He started in joy, crying. I had to take him away from the tree. I said, the tree is not that strong yet. You may kill the tree. You please come in the house, and if you want to hug the trees, I have many big trees. You can do as much hugging and wrestling and gymnasium, whatever you want to do. But this tree, you don't touch it. Suddenly anger. What? He said, you are saying I am torching the tree? I was loving it. I said, I know sometimes you can hug somebody lovingly. It used to happen to me when I was traveling in Punjab. Punjab must be the Oregon of India. Somehow all the idiots of the country have managed to live in Punjab. And it was so difficult for me to get from the platform back to the car, because everybody was hugging, and out of love, and a Punjabi hug. You cannot imagine it. That my whole body will feel the ache, and particularly my ribs. And I told my friends that, please, these hugs, I am not ready to receive that much love. It is too much. You have to prevent, otherwise I will stop coming to Punjab. These idiots don't know that hug does not mean that you just crush the other person. And certainly they were doing very lovingly, but very lovingly you can kill. So I said to the Sufi, you come in the house, don't be angry, that tree is not strong enough, and that tree is very special, you don't destroy it. I became enlightened under a Mulberry tree. So my people have brought that tree from the original Mulberry tree, a seed, and they have grown it. And it is still not strong enough for your hug. You come inside. He came inside and he started talking in the same way he must have been talking to his disciples, that I see God everywhere. Only God and nothing else. I said, if you see only God and nothing else, then to whom you are talking? There is only God and nothing else. Then whom you are talking? And for what purpose? God must be knowing it. You keep silent. And when all his disciples had gone, I told him that I know what has happened to you. You have been hypnotizing yourself for 30 years that everywhere is God. And now it has become a continuity of a certain post-hypnotic suggestion that you are carrying. And you are continuing it because you know perfectly well if you stop talking about it, it will disappear within hours. He said, no, it cannot disappear. I see God everywhere. I said, then for 3 days you stop talking about God and stop practicing anything that everywhere is God. Don't repeat it. For 3 days, forget about it. 30 days you have done your work. Now for 3 days, let me show you that what you have gained in 30 years. And it didn't it was not necessary even to take 3 days. Just the next day morning, he said to me that what I had gained in 30 years, you have destroyed in one day. You are against religion. You are an enemy of religion. I said, of course, I am an enemy of religion. That kind of religion that you have believed in. And I am against all this nonsense, because what is the meaning of 30 years practicing can be lost in one day? Then even 300 years, 3 days, or 3 lives, maybe 3 months, but it can be destroyed. It is not your experience, it is just an imposed idea. So I don't say that you have to start thinking in terms that everything is divine, all is God. That is rubbish. Never start from anything which is basically a belief. Just take a jump into yourself and don't ask me what you will find there. Because if I tell you what you will find there, you will immediately start hypnotizing yourself for it. Then you will find it, but it will not be the true thing. It will be only a hallucination. Just take the jump within and you will come to know. You will come to feel. You will come to experience. Religion is experiencing the truth. Man needs religion. It is the last luxury, the ultimate luxury. Below it is love. And I have been teaching about love so much so that you can come to that crucial moment where you feel the other is hell. Because that is the point of turning. Sartre needed somebody to tell him that the other is hell. What about you? You have tried so hard to become one with the other. Why not try a little bit to be one with yourself? Because that is not going to be difficult. You are already one with yourself. Just you have to look inwards. A little turning in. And the happening. But then you are not a Christian, nor a Hindu, nor a Mohammedan, nor a Jew. You are simply religious. I am for religion, for religiousness, and I am certainly against all religions because they are all pseudo.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.